have pandemic fatigue, but public health experts say this holiday season is no time to let your guard down. Good Monday morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, we've got a warning for this Thanksgiving and beyond as COVID cases are spiking once again. Give us a call with your COVID questions about Thanksgiving. It's 549-2937. Then later, WJCT is helping listeners take one small step toward bridging our political divides. We'll explain. But first this hour, the latest on the COVID pandemic. The U.S. surpassed 11 million coronavirus cases Sunday, says Johns Hopkins University, as states around the nation are enacting restrictions once again to slow the spread of the virus. Here in Florida, we added more than 10,000 new cases Sunday. That is the largest single-day increase of coronavirus since the summer. We've got a cumulative case count around Florida of just above 885,000. The bottom line is the virus is simply spreading once again aggressively. So, amidst these numbers, public health experts have a warning for you this week. They want you to be very careful this Thanksgiving, and as much as you're tempted to, forego those big family celebrations. Dr. Sunil Joshi heads up the Duval County Medical Society Foundation, and he's on the line. Dr. Joshi, always good to have you on the show. Good morning.
Thank you, Melissa. Good morning to you.
And let us know, everyone, what are your plans for this Thanksgiving? What are your questions about staying safe from coronavirus? Give us a call. It's 549-2937 to join us. Emails to First Coast Connect at WJCT.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Already have lots of your tweets. We'll get to those in a minute. And our Facebook page is open. So Dr. Joshi, there's word we might have a vaccine soon for coronavirus. Both Pfizer and Moderna say they're very close. But that said, we're seeing huge spikes once again at the worst possible time, the holiday season. How concerned are you about this?
Yeah, very concerned. You know, and this is, it's interesting because this is what we were talking about even back in the spring and the early summer, where in the rest of the country, the numbers started to go down. Of course, ours went up in the summer, but in general speaking, the numbers were going down in the summer. And we were concerned about the second peak, the second arrival of COVID-19 and happening in the fall, in particular, once kids go back to school throughout the country and college campuses are opened up and people start traveling again, the concern that there would be a second peak. And that's what's clearly happening throughout the country. And now here in Florida, we're starting to see the numbers go up, you know, which does make us very, very nervous.
Right. And so what's your advice then for people who are planning maybe to have a few relatives, friends over for Thanksgiving? They're tired of all the restrictions. They're tired of this pandemic. They want to have a great holiday. We all have that inclination, but it's not a good idea, is it?
No, it's not. And the thing is, of course, we are all kind of tired of it. There's no doubt about it. You get COVID fatigue, and I hear it in my practice every day. But we can't stop now. I mean, we have to kind of stay vigilant, in particular over the Thanksgiving, Christmas holidays, Hanukkah, all of the holidays that we have coming up over the next 6 to 8 weeks. We need to remain vigilant because regardless of COVID, this is the time of the year where our respiratory viruses tend to peak, in particular the flu. You know, flu season really starts to take off around Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's because people are getting together, they're traveling through airports and on airplanes, and viruses spread. Respiratory viruses in particular spread very, very quickly that way, and COVID is no exception. And so if our goal, of course, here is to get back to a normal way of life, we do need to continue to be vigilant over these next few months, and the holidays are no different.
Right. And so I'm reading from the Centers for Disease Control's website. They say for Thanksgiving, the best thing to do is celebrate virtually or with members of your own household, only the people you're already living with. So Dr. Joshi, that means grandpa and grandma, aunts and uncles, whatever, best friends, they can't come over as much as you might want them to.
Yeah, and that's the recommendation, you know, is that, and of course, if you're living with your parents or your grandparents, it's a different story. But the folks that you're living with in your little nuclear family or in your home pod, so to speak, You've already, you know, been exposed back and forth with those individuals, and so keeping them together during a holiday makes sense. But inviting people from outside, people who may not live in town with you, and people who are traveling from long distances, or even friends in the community, this is probably not the year to do that. You know, and the CDC does have some great ideas and recommendations on ways in which you can still enjoy Thanksgiving. We've been doing a lot of things virtually. This is another thing that we can do virtually, you know, set up that laptop, you know, while you're eating your Thanksgiving dinner, and you can still eat with your friends and family. I know it's not the same as hugging and doing high fives while watching football games, but it is a way to still interact with people that you love without putting people unnecessarily at risk.
What about the concern that if we don't practice what we're preaching here today, Doctor, that hospitals could potentially be overwhelmed between a spike in COVID patients and also people dealing with the flu?
Yeah, and that was the biggest concern from the very beginning, right? We were having issues, especially in the northeastern part of the country, in the spring, which is the tail end of the flu season up there when COVID was first becoming an issue here in the United States. And New York City in particular was overwhelmed with their hospital system, in which there were no hospital beds available. And they're opening up hospital beds in the Javits Center and in Central Park and all of these places. The same concern is what we're worried about now, and that is not just up in the Northeast, but throughout the country, hospitalizations could go up. And remember, not everyone who gets sick with COVID, in fact, the vast majority of people who get COVID, you know, are able to handle it at home by self-isolating and usually can return to their normal way of life within 10 to 14 days. But even if just 1% of the people are requiring hospitalization, that could be enough to overwhelm any healthcare system in this country, but in particular, those here in Northeast Florida.
We're speaking with Dr. Sunil Joshi, president of the Duval County Medical Society Foundation. We'll go to your calls in a moment. Let us know, how are you celebrating Thanksgiving this year? It's 549-2937. Give us a call. Lots of tweets already. Daniel tweets the show, "We are sadly canceling our trip to see family. Staying in their home seems like an impossible way to keep any social distancing in place. It's a sacrifice, but we're going to make it, understanding the possible alternatives." Jason, "We have advanced technology. We'll use it to connect with loved ones." Emily, "It'll be just us and our kids, but we're going to stay in pajamas, eat, nap, take a walk, watch Christmas movies, and eat again." Good for you, Emily. Another tweet, "My sister hosts the most beautiful Thanksgivings every year, but this year we're all staying home. We will meet with masks and swap sides. We'll trade her glorious stuffing for a dessert, and we'll also give each other samples of the vegetables that we make." That's a good idea. I like that idea. Here's one from Lori. "I've finally become the Thanksgiving hostess, my lifelong dream. But this year, it's not safe. Some family think we're being ridiculous, but they're the ones we're trying to protect. I'll spend the day cooking, then deliver treats and messages of gratitude from a distance," she says. Dr. Joshi, what's your message for people like Lori who are telling their relatives, look, it's just not safe, and their relatives think all of this is overblown or a hoax?
Yeah, that is probably the most challenging thing. And, you know, the folks, like, for instance, in my family, but I'm sure in many, many families, the folks that are most likely to feel like this is a hoax and it's not something that we should be concerned about are unfortunately the older folks. You know, it's the older mm-hmm. population, and these are the people who are at most risk of requiring hospitalization if they were to be infected. And part of our challenge is to keep them healthy. And so what that tweeter had just mentioned is exactly what I think a lot of us are dealing with this holiday season, is how do we convince our parents, grandparents, loved ones, aunts and uncles, that we are doing what's in their best interest by minimizing the direct exposure to our children who may be in school, to the rest of us who may be exposed to other people, and then increasing the risk of our older relatives from getting sick and requiring hospitalization. It is a tough call, but she's doing the right thing, and I think that's how we need to approach it, is that, hey, you know, we can celebrate in a lot of different ways, and we can certainly do it virtually, and we can certainly drop off food, and we can meet, you know, standing outside the door while you open the door and talk, but But being inside the house together for extended periods of time without our masks off is not the way to keep each other safe this year.
Here's an interesting data point. 1/3 of American kids already live in an extended family household. But if you're already living with your pod, as you call it, doctor, just stick with them. Lots of questions for you on Twitter. Melissa tweets the show, if someone outside the family already had COVID, would they be safe to include since they couldn't spread it again?
Yeah, that's not necessarily true. Okay, so somebody who has had COVID, it depends on how long ago they had it. It also depends on whether they had antibodies after they were infected. You know, we're not routinely testing people to see if their antibody levels have gone up. And so just because somebody had COVID in the past does not necessarily mean that they cannot be infected again and that they cannot spread it to others. So the same rule applies for that friend that, look, it'd be best if he or she did not come to your house. But if they did, you know, wearing a mask, staying 6 feet apart and washing your hands, all those typical things that we've talked about need to still be put into place.
Here's a tweet from Kevin. How many days past a positive COVID test should one be before you get a flu shot?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, the main reason for that is we don't want you as someone who has COVID to walk into a healthcare practitioner's office or to a pharmacy where you can also spread it to other people. So again, the typical rule of thumb is if it's 14 days since you had tested positive and you remained asymptomatic for at least the previous 72 hours and no fever in the last 48 hours, at that point, we feel comfortable with you going out to getting your flu shot. But remember, it's not so much about getting the flu shot while you're sick with COVID as much as it is exposing other people to COVID while you go out to get your flu shot.
You know, Dr. Joshi, I kind of feel like people, for the most part, aren't getting the message about how dire this could get. Every public health expert that's been interviewed about this in the last week or so has been really sounding the alarm that this winter could be the deadliest yet for this pandemic in the United States. It's scary to think about, but at the same time, as you said, people are so wary of this that maybe they just hear all of this now as like the boy who cried wolf. They're tuning it out. Are you at all worried about that? What's your message there?
Yeah, and I'm not sure. You know, how can we say that this is the boy who cried wolf when you're seeing people die and you're seeing hospitals overwhelmed? And you just have to look at the stories in other parts of the country to know that it's true. You know, here in Northeast Florida, we may not have seen it as bad as other places. Just talk to our colleagues in Miami. You know, talk to friends that might live in some other places. This is not a hoax. And it didn't go away after the election, you know, ended. You know, like a lot of people were saying, it's still here and it's still going on. And you know, it's so hard. It's like when a hurricane comes, you know, you're like, oh, you know, we deal with this all the time and we're fine. We don't have the issues other people have. Well, that's because we haven't been hit directly, you know, and the same thing can happen here with COVID. You know, we have about 1,000 hospital beds open right now in Northeast Florida with all of our hospitals combined. A simple way to look at this is a very virulent virus. If we had even 20,000 people infected with it in Jacksonville at the same time, and 1% of them required hospitalization, that right there puts us at 200 people in the hospital. And suddenly the number of available hospital beds start to shrink, you know, considerably. And people who require hospitalization from this particular virus typically require ICU hospitalization, and we have far fewer ICU beds available in Northeast Florida. So again, this is one of the things that we have to take seriously. If it gets out of control, we're all going to wish that we would have followed the public health official's recommendation.
Right, which is why we're having you on the program today. Our guest right now is Dr. Sunil Joshi, president of the Duval County Medical Society Foundation. So Dr. Joshi, the overwhelming message is stay vigilant through the holiday season. Thanksgiving, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Christmas, and through New Year's Day. Let's forecast ahead into 2021. Two companies, both Moderna and Pfizer, say that they have exciting results for a coronavirus vaccine. Two vaccines that could be on the market soon, which could be anywhere from 94 to 98% effective in protecting us against this virus. As we hopefully look ahead to a vaccine in the spring, what are your thoughts about the efficacy of these two products? And do you think Americans will be willing to get vaccinated?
Yeah, so number one, the efficacy is outstanding. You know, you have a virus vaccine that is, you know, 94 to 98% effective in terms of the folks who received the virus versus those who got placebo, or 94 to 98% less likely to be infected with COVID-19, is absolutely fantastic. Am I concerned that people are not going to get the vaccine? Yeah, I am, because, you know, I see polls, you know, on multiple different national networks that suggest it's less than 50% of the folks who are interested in getting the vaccine. And yeah, that does concern me, especially if that's the older population, because, again, I feel like the FDA is going through the proper channels in terms of evaluating these drugs and these vaccines, I should say. The safety data is going to be over a year of study to come up with safety data on both of these vaccines that are coming out with the two different drug companies. And so I feel very, very comfortable that if the FDA approves it and says that it's safe to be provided, that is the safe vaccine to be provided. And if that's the case, I would hope that in particular our most vulnerable population are folks over the age of 65 and those with chronic health conditions, in particular respiratory conditions, would feel comfortable getting the vaccine. Because once we're able to protect the most vulnerable population, the ones that are most likely to be hospitalized, then we can start getting back to life as usual. So again, this is one of those things where we all have to do what's in the best interest of each other. And I do believe that if the FDA approves these vaccines, that we should feel comfortable getting it.
So do you think this time next year, say you're on the program fall of 2021, we'll be back to something approaching the lives we all had before all this began?
I think that next Thanksgiving, if we're sitting here talking, we should feel a lot more comfortable about having our family and loved ones over for Thanksgiving celebrations compared to this year. Now, whether people choose to do it, I think a lot of people are learning how healthy they're staying by doing social distancing. That may be a different issue. But in terms of the COVID pandemic, yes, if we have a vaccine that is truly approved and people are receiving the vaccine appropriately, at least through the spring and early summer, then I think we can be sitting here next year at this time talking about a whole different ballgame.
I really hope that's the case. One more question for you for Thanksgiving, Dr. Joshi. If you have a college student coming home from campus for Thanksgiving, what should families do there?
Oh, boy, and that's a tough call. You know, if your child has been on campus in college, there's definitely a concern that your loved one may be an asymptomatic carrier as they come home, and in particular, if you're dealing with a vulnerable population inside of your house. So, you know, one thing I would recommend, most college campuses do offer free testing for students, and so if they can be tested a week or so before they're coming home to visit, that would be awesome, because if you get that negative test as they're traveling home, you could feel much more comfortable with that child being inside your house and interacting with his or her loved ones like you would want them to. I think that would be the best approach. If not, you have to seriously consider you know, continuing the distancing with your loved ones so that they are separated and staying in a separate room and wearing their mask inside the house and sitting 6 feet away from you while you're eating dinner. You know, I hate to say it, but it's almost like they're not in your pod at that point if they have been outside of the house for an extended period of time. What I have recommended to my family members who have children in college is to have them tested before they come back home, and then that negative test gives you a lot more freedom to interact during the holiday.
That's great advice. Thanks so much for joining us. He's Dr. Sunil Joshi, president of the Duval County Medical Society Foundation. Doctor, thank you so much.
Thank you, Melissa, and thank you for everything you're doing to inform people during this pandemic.
We'll keep at it. Here's more tweets coming into the show. Robin tweets us, we ordered our Thanksgiving dinner from Chef Kenny Gilbert's new Silkies Holiday to-go menu in Springfield. That's a good idea. Here is an email from Kristen. We're going to have Thanksgiving at home with just my in-laws. They have been very safe and they babysit our one-year-old. My parents and my brother's family, unfortunately, have recently been to weddings, to gender reveal parties. They are not taking this seriously. They are pretty mad that we aren't seeing them. It's sad that my parents haven't seen their granddaughter for a long time, says Kristen. Kristen, I'm so sorry that you're in that situation. And I'm so sorry that so many families have to be apart this holiday. and that so many family members aren't taking this seriously and are angry about it. But you know what? This is the situation we're in. We really are not out of the woods yet. And so everyone, just do what you can to take the doctor's timely advice, because this winter, according to all of the projections, is not going to be a good one for getting through this pandemic. Now, as he said, we're not in as bad a situation here in North Florida as they are, say, in South Florida or other parts of the country, particularly the plain states like North Dakota right now, where the positivity rates and deaths are off the charts. But we are still in this pandemic, so continue to mask, continue to distance, be safe this holiday. Don't go to any gatherings with a lot of people under one roof. Stay with, as the doctor said, your pod, the people that you live with already, and just keep it to that group. If we can all do that, we can get through this relatively successfully. So that's the message there. A quick break and much more still ahead. Meanwhile, later in the hour, how you can take one small step toward bridging our deep political divides. We'll tell you about WJCT's One Small Step. But up next.
Every day, certainly at some point, comes to mind every day. That's just a further reminder for myself, my family, my friends, of the good fortune and the opportunity to give back.
A Jacksonville man who was aboard that famous Miracle on the Hudson flight has spent every day since turning his gratitude into service. We'll tell you what Casey Jones is up to this Thanksgiving. That's next. We'll be right back.
Turntable Tuesday can now be heard on Anthology on the WJCT app and 89.9 HD3. For the best on vinyl, listen to Anthology Tuesdays at 9. Turntable Tuesday, part of the Jacksonville Music Experience.
Join WJCT for Voices of the First Coast, One Small Step Across the Political Divide, a nationwide project with the goal of breaking down boundaries between strangers. At this free event, you'll hear from StoryCorps founder Dave Isay, listen to excerpts from select conversations recorded across the First Coast, and engage in discussion with participants. Join us on Thursday, November 19th at 7 p.m. This virtual event is free, but reservations are required. Information at wjct.org/events.
We will now proceed with the review of the United States of America.
The United Nations is reviewing the United States' human rights record.
The past 4 years have been defined by a rollback in the social safety net and protections against discrimination.
But the Trump administration sees the UN itself as a flawed institution. The UN, the U.S., and human rights on the world.
Tomorrow at 3 on WJCT News 89.9.
The local executive at Bank of America, who was aboard that fateful flight known to us all now as Miracle on the Hudson. On January 15th, 2009, Casey Jones survived the ordeal when the U.S. Air Flight 1549, captained by pilot Chesley Sullenberger, took off from LaGuardia in New York, was struck by birds, and landed dramatically in the Hudson River. Every passenger aboard that flight was safely rescued. It was a life-changing experience for Casey Jones, and ever since, he's focused on service and giving back. And right now, Casey has a turkey drive going for Thanksgiving. I spoke to him and Major Keith Biggers of the Salvation Army. Take a listen. Casey Jones, Major Keith Biggers, good to have you both on the program. Thanks for being with us.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Casey, let's start with you. You were one of the first guests we ever booked on First Coast Connect over a decade ago when you and others who had been on that fateful flight that went into the Hudson River published a book about your experience, your life-changing experience, the book Miracle on the Hudson. And it's amazing to note that we are coming up on the 12-year anniversary of that incredible day. So as you think back on what happened then with Captain Sullenberger landing that plane and you and all of the passengers being saved, what's going through your mind this holiday season?
Every day, and especially every holiday, is certainly very special because, a tipped wing or any of a multitude of other things that could have happened that day, this would be a very different conversation, potentially with somebody else. So, every day, I don't want to say I dwell on it, but it certainly at some point comes to mind every day. I'm very, very thankful. And then certainly at Thanksgiving, with the things that we've done with the Salvation Army for the past, this is the 11th year now, that's just a further reminder for myself, my family, my friends, of the good fortune and the opportunity to give back.
Right. And I remember you telling me that your life really changed after being on the Miracle on the Hudson flight. You just had a different set of priorities after surviving that experience. Does this go along with that?
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. I would still say I'm very driven, but I would also say that the things that perhaps used to bother me really don't bother me anywhere near as much anymore. I think I have a lot better perspective. I'm certainly very, very thankful for each and every day. The bad things really aren't as bad as I think sometimes we think they are. And then I don't use that phrase lightly in these times with the pandemic, right? That's mm-hmm. bad stuff. But the day-by-day stuff that we encounter and have to overcome, we all go through it. We accept that. We move on. And always, always, always seeing the positive in everything I can every day. One of the things, Melissa, I probably mentioned to you when we spoke over a decade ago, I had more hair and it was darker back then.
Yeah. Well, it's been a long decade for a lot of us, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Well,
just one of the things that we probably talked about was the fact that, every day when I wake up, I feel like I'm going to have a great day. And I was always very positive, but there's just that difference of knowing that things could have been so much different. And I try to bring that perspective and that outlook to anyone that I can whenever I meet them, just hopefully by actions more than by words.
And one way you're doing that is with the turkey drive for the Salvation Army. Let's talk to Major Keith Biggers now. Major Biggers, this year, you're getting a lot of interest in your holiday efforts. People see everyone out with those red kettles every holiday season, but guys like Casey are doing what they can, and the public wants to help people suffering this holiday as well. So tell us a little bit about what you're doing and how the public can join in.
Well, thank you. Yes, the need is greater by far than previous holidays. And we are just so appreciative of Casey Jones and tremendous support that he's given us to make sure that these families have a Thanksgiving food basket every year. And so we just encourage all those who can give to support this drive for the turkeys this year. And we know the community has always rallied and responded in a marvelous way to meet the needs of their brothers and sisters. So we just are so appreciative of the support that Casey and other organizations have provided for us to make sure all the needs are met each and every day.
Right. And with the pandemic and more people out of work this holiday of 2020, I would think it's even more dire for a lot of the folks that you serve.
Yes, it is. And the number of families that have come to us in need have drastically increased, and we anticipate that will continue. We've already doubled the number of families for Christmas needing assistance for their children this year, and likewise with the turkey Thanksgiving food boxes as well. The need is greater by far, and so we're going to do everything humanly possible that we can, depending on the support and the blessings of our community, and making sure that all the needs are met for these families this year.
So, Casey, tell us then how people can help out, beginning with the turkey drive that you're leading.
The turkey drive, we set up a GoFundMe page, and it's the 2020 Miracle on the Hudson Turkey Drive. And every single dollar that is contributed goes to buy turkeys, plain and simple. You're not donating money to get it donated somewhere else. We take every penny, and we've got an arrangement with some local stores, and we buy turkeys. And so that's why I have to finish that order by next Wednesday, is so that I can get that order in. We'll pick them up on Friday. My goal this year, and I haven't spoken with the major about this yet, but I know that their need is great. We set a record last year with 783 turkeys donated. And this year, I really, really want to hit 1,000 turkeys. So that's our goal, is next a week from Friday the 20th, to pull up to the Salvation Army loading dock and drop off 1,000 turkeys for those who need them this Thanksgiving in the Jacksonville area.
Wow. Well, let's see if we can hit it. Everyone check out Casey's GoFundMe. Give what you can. And can you say the name of the page again, Casey?
It's the 2020 Miracle on the Hudson Turkey Drive.
There you go. Miracle on the Hudson survivor, Casey Jones, a local executive at Bank of America. Check out his GoFundMe. And Major Biggers, how can people support your efforts as well? All the other stuff the Salvation Army is up to.
Well, this year our kettles, red kettles, have already been put out in some of the locations in Northeast Florida, because we've been blessed by some of the retail stores that have allowed us, knowing the increased needs, to go ahead and start ringing the bells earlier than normal. And so there's opportunities to give in the red kettles. We'll be in mass after Thanksgiving in all of the retail stores, and we're so grateful this year that they've all have, even in the midst of COVID, have responded and allowed the Salvation Army to once again stand in front of their stores and collect. This Christmas Red Kettle Drive is so important for us to not only make sure that all the families are assisted during the holidays, but it's also one of our biggest fundraisers throughout for the year, our fiscal year, to enable us to continue meeting the needs daily, whether it's food for groceries for families coming through a food pantry, whether it's housing assistance for those who are homeless, whether it's families, men and women, they're staying in our Tower Center of Hope, or whether it's other basic needs of assistance that's provided, as well as hot nourishing meals that we provide daily. So there's opportunities to give that way. They could also reach out, go online to the Salvation Army website, www.salvationarmynefl.org. That's the Salvation Army NEFL for Northeast Florida.org, and see other opportunities to either volunteer to help that way, or for other opportunities to give. We've also reached out to a number of businesses, organizations, asking them if they would sponsor a kettle this year, and so we've gotten some response from that. So we are so grateful, again, for Casey Jones and this Miracle on the Hudson Turkey Drive, that we really are going to need those 1,000 turkeys this this Thanksgiving season. So we're so appreciative of his support all throughout the years, and the community support as well, that we know will enable us to continue to do the most good to the most people in the most need.
Well, check it out, everyone. And I want to thank you both, Casey Jones and Major Keith Biggers, for spreading the word here with us. helping all of us out there have a better Thanksgiving and holiday season. Guys, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
You.
Well, it's no secret that 2020 has been a very tough year for small business. With the coronavirus now spiking again, how can business owners even begin to plan for the next 12 months? David Maravich is the CEO of 121 Financial here in Jacksonville, and he has some thoughts on planning ahead for 2021.
David, good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Glad to be here.
You know, we just don't know what 2021 will bring, but I think everyone is hoping something better than what we've dealt with for most of 2020, and especially when it comes to the economy. So while we wait for another COVID-19 stimulus bill out of Congress, and so many businesses out there are struggling and trying to plan, what advice do you have for people who really don't know what to expect in the next 12 months?
You know, I think there's several things. I think number one, we need to look at and understand is this a new normal for our business with changes that people have made into how they're conducting business with us or how we're conducting our business with others? Will that remain the way that it is today? You know, we hear a lot of stories about people who travel for their business that haven't traveled now for 9 months. You know, is that going to become a new norm that people are going to continue to do everything via Zoom and that type of thing? So I think that's one thing is what is our future? You know, is our business such that it is going to make a major change, that it's not necessarily, a restaurant or something? You know, it are people, I think that people are going to come back to full force, but I think other places, people have learned, for example, our business, there's a lot of people that have learned to use other methods, online banking, that sort of thing. You know, I think that a lot of those people are going to continue that because they found it's much easier. I think the other thing is people need to start thinking ahead and, if they haven't started doing projections for next year, they need to do them, and really understand what is it going to look like expense-wise and income-wise? I think the first quarter is going to be probably a little bit of up and down before we get going. With changes in, from the election to, is the vaccine out? I think that's going to have a major impact for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So I think those are things that they need to look at.
How do you accurately project with all of those factors?
I think you're very conservative. Because I think we can see now, and take a look at where's your business today? October, September, October, November, and build from there. I don't think we can do what we've done traditionally. I think we need to do it start off with where are we today, do we think, and then if your business is seasonal, does it drop off in that first quarter, then maybe you have a bigger drop off than you typically do, just till we get the year kicked off.
Yeah. What else do you advise clients that come to you for advice? What else is on your radar?
I think people need to look at, you know, where are they getting the most bang for their buck in their business? Where's the most value coming in? And really focusing on that area, you know, and maybe not, maybe in the early stages here, not trying to do something that may be new, but really, really target on if there's a particular type of customer that drives your business, focus on them. Focus on ones that are similar to those before doing something, you know, new and different, I think is one thing. And I think the other thing is, you know, what do people need versus what they want? You know, let's focus on the need for the beginning. Focus, and that goes for our customer's need as well as what do we need? And maybe not so much the want until we get under, you know, more stable footing.
Yeah, and is it hard to be optimistic as a business owner in this climate, or do you feel that people are ready to turn the page and are feeling better about the coming year?
You know, I think people are ready to turn the page. I would also say that, you know, when you look at Jacksonville as a whole in Northeast Florida, we're much better off than many other areas of the state or even in the country. So I think that in and of itself should give us a point of, you know, confidence. We have probably the lowest unemployment rate in the state of any of the major cities, you know, which is an excellent thing. I think, you know, you see a lot of people that I think do have that confidence. I mean, look at our real estate market in Jacksonville. It's positive, you know, it's humming along quite well. I think there's a lot of things out there that are positive and that people that live here, you know, have that positive attitude and spirit. And I think, you know, I think we can build on that even more.
Let's hope so. It's good to talk to you. David Maravich, CEO of 121 Financial here in Jacksonville. Thanks for your thoughts.
Thanks, Melissa.
And in a moment, taking one small step toward bridging our political divides, we'll tell you about our project. That's next.
Talia Levin is Jewish, but she faked being a white supremacist online for a year. Why?
I think this is a movement that is evil and needs to be defeated. And you have to understand where they're coming from and what they believe and what they want in order to better combat them.
How white supremacy works on the internet. Next time on It's Been a Minute from NPR.
Saturday at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
I'm Robert Scott. I've been a sustaining supporter of WJCT for over 10 years now. I listen to WJCT all the time, and I have since I was a young adult. One of my favorite shows is actually a local show, and that's First Coast Connect. One of the great values, I think, is listeners are invited to call in. By the end of the hour, I'm definitely more informed about an issue. It's also made me think about it a lot deeper than I probably would have. This is WJCT News 89.9.
During the War of 1812, the British built a fort in Spanish colonial Florida that became a free black settlement. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, will visit Prospect Bluff. We'll discuss the 1947 Marjorie Stoneman Douglas book, The Everglades, River of Grass, and the Dade Massacre of 1835. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
Let's zoom in here on steel, shall we? Supply is low because COVID slowdowns, but demand is high. Think all those new appliances and cars that people are buying.
My inventory is worth way more. right? So I'm selling inventory that's been sitting, which is exciting.
Replacing it, though, is not so simple. I'm Kai Rizdahl, Steel in This Economy, next time on Marketplace.
Tonight at 6, here on WJCT News 89.9.
We will now proceed with the review of the United States of America.
The United Nations is reviewing the United States human rights record.
The past 4 years have been defined by a rollback in the social safety net and protections against discrimination.
But the Trump administration sees the UN itself as a flawed institution. The UN, the US, and human rights on the world.
Today at 3 on WJCT News 89.9.
It might have seemed like a good idea in the 1780s, but we've been arguing about it ever since.
Let the people directly vote for their president the same way they vote for all other officials.
Democratic Senator Birch Bayh led the charge against the Electoral College back in the 60s. President Nixon was on board too. But now, who's at the forefront of the fight for a fairer system? That's next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. We'll join WJCT Public Media this week for an evening of conversation and listening. WJCT presents StoryCorps' One Small Step Conversations. This is a nationwide project with the goal of breaking down boundaries between strangers. Now, here's the challenge. You just have a conversation with another member of this community who you might not otherwise meet and who you might disagree with. WJCT's Sky LeBron is here with more. Hey, Sky.
Hey, Melissa.
So this is a way to listen to conversations and also take part in them too, right?
Yeah, it's a really great opportunity. Like you said, I think you encapsulated it perfectly. It's just you may not talk to a person regularly who you disagree with, and this is an opportunity, especially in times like these in 2020, what's been a crazy year, what's been a very divisive year, to do exactly that. And on Thursday, we will be holding a one-hour event where we go back to some of the conversations that we felt had a lot of impact on the two people that were involved. And we give them a chance to kind of talk about how their conversation went and the highlights of it, what they were nervous about, things like that. We actually have a small clip of one of the conversations and one of the highlights of those conversations.
Do you feel like you've been hurt more lately?
I have felt more hated. I grew up in the 60s, come on. But I feel more hated now because I believe that for some reason people feel like it's okay to hate. I don't know what it is, but it makes me sad.
Yeah, it makes me sad just to hear you say that.
And that's just one of the examples of the conversations that is a conversation that took place in the past couple months. And we are going to be bringing them back for a conversation on Thursday night. It's a completely virtual event, and it's been a fun ride being involved in some of these conversations myself as a facilitator and being able to just be in the virtual room when these conversations are happening.
So this is a way to kind of sit down with someone from the First Coast who you might be on opposite sides of the political divide with. That's happening a lot lately.
Yeah.
The conversations aren't happening, but the divides are happening. So we're trying to get conversation going.
Yeah, and so far it's been very successful. We've done around 20 conversations working with somebody who previously worked here, Lindsay Kilbride, now in New York, but she's continuing to help us with this project. And the conversations have been really awesome. Like I said, I felt really good taking part in the small way that I can, just pushing these conversations together. And, you know, a lot of the time I would say people walk into the conversation thinking, you know, I really don't want to get into an argument. I don't want to get into a shouting match with somebody. But the conversations aren't tailored for that. And they're more about your upbringing and how you grew to believe the things that you did, and how that compares to somebody else that maybe grew up in a completely different situation. And it is a really good way. For the most part, I would say all the conversations have been very positive and just productive in terms of trying to bridge that gap of, you know, I may not understand you, but this is a way that it can start to enter my mind a little bit more on both sides of the spectrum.
Now, WJCT Public Media is one of only six stations across the United States chosen to lead in this initiative in 2020, and it's through the national nonprofit StoryCorps. The founder of StoryCorps, Dave Isay, is he also going to make a quick virtual appearance Thursday night?
Yeah, Lindsay was able to do a virtual interview with him And that will be displayed on Thursday as well. And of course, he has so much knowledge of just what StoryCorps is, Past One Small Step, all the various projects. And this is just one of those projects, One Small Step. And once again, I'll say, we just feel like it's such an important thing to do in 2020. I don't think, you know, this was something that was started a couple years ago. Going into 2020, I don't think people thought about how important something like this would be, especially as the year has progressed with the summer protests and COVID-19, everything in between.
The election. Seriously. Yeah, I mean, we've been through so much this year. So what's cool about this is you make sure that you guide these as conversations. They don't end up as debates or arguments so much as just conversing.
Exactly. And it's not like we just put two people in a room. All right, I'm out. No, we are facilitators, so if things start to get a little bit out of hand, which really we have not had those issues whatsoever, but if they were to get out of hand or if somebody is being disrespectful in any type of way, we are there to mitigate any concerns, or if somebody feels uncomfortable, we are there to help mediate over the course of that conversation. And that's been a really interesting thing for me, just to hear people from both sides come together, have these conversations. Sometimes they can be a little bit awkward. A lot of times they're really beautiful conversations, and just understanding like, wow, I didn't know that beforehand. And I didn't know that people think about it that way. So it's been a really good development, I think, for the people that have taken part. And I also think it's been really good development for me as somebody that, you know, is able to hear multiple sides from a wide variety of people.
And so with all of that said, we want to invite everyone to be part of it. They need to register. It's Thursday night. It's free, but you got to register. How can people do that?
Yeah, you can go online at wjct.org, and there's options for registering. You can also go on our social media platforms. Or if you're confused about it, email me. My personal email, slebron@wjct.org. If you're trying to figure out how to register, it's this Thursday. It's from 7 to 8 p.m., so only an hour long. It's completely virtual. You just log in and enjoy the show. And I think it's going to be a really enjoyable experience.
Check it out. One Small Step this Thursday night at 7 o'clock online. He's our own Sky LeBron. That's spelled like LeBron James.
Yes.
In case people want to email you, slebron@wjct.org. Thanks, Sky.
Appreciate it, Melissa.
And that's our show. Thanks for listening. Thanks to all of our guests and callers and our amazing staff. Keep those emails coming, meanwhile, to our show at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Catch our rebroadcast tonight at 8 or our podcast. It'll be up later today, wherever you listen. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9 Jax. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.